Good evening. You're watching Stockwatch with myself, Nastasia Aronsa. Tackling your questions in studio tonight is Derek Janser van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Ian Cruikshanks from the South African Institute of Race Relations. Don't forget to send through your questions to us via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Great. So let's talk about what you thought of today's market performance. Ian, I see you writing frantically, so we'll start off with you.
I was just reminding me that my partner here is Derek Janser van Rensburg. I think what we saw was a little bit of reaction, a little bit of recovery. Clearly it was a recovery, you know, after a violent sell-off, and it was quite violent. And I think what it's saying is, one must not be easily tempted into buying a dip just because it's a dip, as we used to for so many years. We've got to say, why is it happening? It's simply a very short-term relief rally. And to me, it showed every sign of that. You know, the gold price is still around 1,500. The rand is still under huge pressure. Speak to the people who deal in the currency. And you know, there are a heck of a lot more people, more buyers of dollars than sellers of dollars. So I think we're likely to see a continuation, to a greater or lesser extent, in the short term. What's that between now and the end of the year, say?
Yeah. Derek?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the moves on the market, just unpacking it, call it from a sector perspective, I mean, what actually drove the bounce, or call it the relief rally that we're talking about? And it was very much driven by, call it the Anglos and the Billitons and some of the resources bouncing off extremely oversold levels. Remember, these stocks in the sector came back very sharply during the month of July, and obviously rolling over into August. I mean, I think Anglos was trading sort of circa 390, sitting at about 325 a day or so ago. So picking up, bouncing towards that 340 level. And then again, big heavyweight Naspers, you know, obviously getting a little bit of wind in its sails, and, you know, a move of 2% or close on 2% in our market has a significant impact in terms of which way the market goes. Look at the financials and the banking stocks, yes, and they didn't look great. Yeah. We've obviously had a string of results that have come out this week. Yeah. So, you know, just looking at it from an SA-specific perspective, I still think the sentiment is extremely bearish, and you know, the tone towards South Africa is certainly not you know, extremely high conviction buying zones at all at the moment.
May I add something to that, Derek, if I may?
Sure.
That is on the banking sector. Having been at the analyst presentation for the half-year results of Nedbank, you know, I can remember the day we had high inflation, high growth, lots of good things, lots of bad things too. But it was conventional for the banks to get 20 to 25% increase in headline earnings year after year. I spoke to Mike Brown afterwards, after that presentation. I said, those were giddy days. He said, we won't ever see them again. He said, that's it. And they were beating their chest. Look, we got 2.3%. 2.3%.
Yeah.
Hell, that's perilously close to negative growth if you compare it to inflation. And I think that this is what we have to get used to. It's a new world, and that, I'm sure, is why, because it's a new set of investment parameters, that is why we're going to have to get used to a market which perhaps shows more momentum on the downside than on the recovery side.
Speaking of those days, we were having a conversation off air about whether this period that we're going through, this bearish sentiment where either some people want to move their money offshore, some people want to run away as fast as they can, whether we've seen this happen before, because a lot of the times if you speak to guys who've been around, who've seen it all, they're all calm and relaxed because to them, we've seen the worst, and this may not be the worst that we, as probably my generation, the millennials, assume that South Africa might not be going to where we want it to be. From your experience and everything you've seen, should we be calm, or is it a situation where things are different and we can't compare one period to another?
You can always do comparisons,
and
there's always somewhere to justify differences. But I remember when we did see something like this sort of pent-up concern. I'm not going to call it panic. We're not at panic yet. But, you know, 1985, P.W. Botha's Rubicon speech, and he told the rest of the world to get off his back. He had managed, don't worry. 3 years later, the country was bankrupt. We had no official reserves in the Reserve Bank. We couldn't settle our trade account. Wow, now that was really serious. That is when one makes puts on one's best hat and goes and visits the IMF. We're not quite there yet, but it remains a serious threat. And I think it's very worrying. And the worst of all is, government, are they listening? Are they paying attention? Do they know? Do they realize?
Yeah.
We're not sure about that. And that is why we're seeing this huge outflow of funds through the JSC from by foreigners. Mm.
Before we get into the questions that I can see already streaming in, Derek, your view of what's happening globally. We're still talking China, U.S., and at this rate, we might still be talking about it well into U.S. elections.
Yeah, look, I mean, at the moment, it's actually all about the U.S. economy and the growth that's taking place there, and it's actually to the detriment of the rest of the world, and in particular, the emerging market space. So, you know, you put that in perspective, you know, the only place to really have been invested has been in, call it, U.S. dollars and underlying tech companies on that side, where a lot of the growth has actually taken place. And also, generally, the market and the growth in the U.S. has been strong. So, you know, there is a lot to contend with. You know, the market today is, in fact, very different to a market that I was used to even 3 or 5 years ago, where, you know, a lot of the push and pull factors that are determinable are out of your control. You know, we're watching things like Twitter, which didn't exist too long ago, and waiting for the next tweet out of Trump about further tariff increases and how he's going to deal with that. And then we kind of wait for information flow out of China in terms of how they're going to react. All of this information flow is unpredictable from a timing perspective and how they're going to have this tit-for-tat war. So it makes it a very, very challenging environment from an investable universe perspective to look for opportunities to build a portfolio and look for underlying value. Again, you know, I just think that if you just look at the emerging market space and put South Africa into that that boxing ring, you know, we are minuscule, you know, probably the least favored emerging market within the emerging market space, and emerging markets probably least favored when you look at global markets. So, you know, you look at the JSE, you look at the results, the recent results out of the JSE as a listed business. It talks to the low liquidity environment we're in. This is a hunting ground for global hedge funds at the moment looking for short opportunities, because it's actually quite easy to manipulate stock prices in a low liquidity environment like this. Yeah. So, you know, where is the light at the end of the tunnel? We're going to have to lean on authoritative figures. You know, we need information flow around how we're going to stimulate growth in South Africa. Is Eskom going to unbundle? How are they going to deal with Eskom? You know, we need to have transparency, and the global arena needs to see South Africa taking steps that are going to emulate into growth, looking 2 to 3 to 4 years out, and markets will start to look forward and price that in. But things are just too slow and not happening at the moment.
All right. So the first question for tonight, and the viewer wants to know, what does the panel think of Truworths and Stefanuti stocks? Would you buy it at current levels?
Well, there's a big gap between their operations. I would avoid the anything to do with clothing, with non-essential sales. And I think that is where we will put Truworths, despite its record, despite its how well it may or may not have been doing. I think we're going to find this growing pressure all the time, whether it's Eskom or mortgage bonds or whatever, that's forcing the spending power of consumers to pull back and pull back more. Remember that 60% of all economic activity can be put at the door of consumer expenditure. Well, if that is so, then I think that Truworths and companies like it are going to be under a lot of pressure. And Stefanuti stocks, well, if one looks at, he listens to the construction and civil engineering groups, they just say there isn't any business. There's nothing new. And where there is, they're uncertain as to whether they're going to get paid or not. So I would say both of them, I'd rather not be a buyer.
Derek?
Yeah, look, I mean, I agree with the sentiment towards the retail sector and, in fact, a lot of what you've said there. So really, just to add to the retail space, it's a bigger picture scenario. Yes. We need growth. We need consumers to spend. And sort of clothing retailers are probably going to be least favored in the macroeconomic environment that we're in at the moment. Let's touch on the construction sector quickly. You know, again, looking back 5, 6, 7 or 8 years, construction was an unbelievable space to play. I remember PPC trading at prices in excess of 30. This was a cornerstone to any portfolio because the yield was just so fantastic. So, you know, your pensioners and, you know, your moms and pop stock type portfolio had PPC for that yield underpin. Where's the construction sector today? You're looking at prices on things like Avenge, which are 2 or 3 cents a share. This used to be a 68 Rand stock. Yeah. Murray and Roberts coming right down to the levels that we see it sort of between 10 or 12 Rand. There was potential for corporate action there. There's not much left. I mean, really, the only thing that we could probably pin a tail on is probably Wilson Bailey. And they, in their own right, have got their own headwinds that they're facing, particularly outside South Africa at the moment. So would I be looking at construction as a sector at this stage of the game? Definitely not. I think these are late to the party bull market stocks that trade up on order book sizes and potential contracts, and you know, you kind of filter out of the sort of top 20 space, top 40, top 60 space, and then start looking at construction stocks once you've had that growth in that bull market phase.
All right. So the next question, actually two questions, are around Discovery and Mediclinic. One, where the viewer wants to know your view on Discovery, and the other viewer wants to know, what do you assume would be the effect that NHI would have on either Discovery or Mediclinic?
Well, I think NHI will be a disaster area come what may, but there we are. It has to have an impact.
Yeah.
It has to, because it's going to restrict the field of activity of companies like Discovery. There's no doubt about it. And Mediclinic too, to an extent. But I'm not going to group them together, but I'll just say they will face the same challenges of government determined to make sure that the margins on which their business operates are minimized. That's not an encouraging outlook.
I mean, that's really essentially it, is their margins are potentially going to be, you're going to see a contraction in margins looking forward. At the end of the day, you know, Discovery, look at the business. In some cases, it's somewhat of a monopoly in the space that it operates in, and that makes it a price dictator. So, you know, with the introduction of the NHI bill that was passed, you know, that's going to start to bring the way they charge and the cost structures associated with what they cover and what they then pass on to clients in the form of medical aid insurance is going to come under pressure. And also it comes down to accessibility to healthcare. You know, in this country, a lot of people have private medical aids and private healthcare accessibility because of medical aids such as Discovery. And that's going to start to fall away. You're going to start to have a little bit more accessibility to healthcare, and margins are going to come under pressure. So, you know, you saw the share price react quite negatively on the announcement of that today.
Yeah.
So I'd be a little bit concerned, and we obviously know the space that they're playing in when it comes to the banking arena. And in my opinion, in the short term, there's probably going to be some short-term capex expenditure to get that up and running and off the ground. I like the business. I think the management are strong in what they do and nimble. But yeah, you know, I'd be a bit concerned in the short term.
All right, let's take an ad break, and when we come back, we've got a question on Standard Bank. We've got a local question about whether it's worth going into rand hedge stocks or going overseas, and if so, which of the countries do you think would be least affected by the trade war? It's a tricky one, so it gives you some time to think about it over the ad break. But remember to keep sending through your questions to us via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Taking a look at the market's picture, starting off with things in the U.S. Stocks are rallying, pushing the S&P 500 into positive territory following the week that we've had. And over in Europe, European stocks closed higher as a sharp fall in global bond yields stabilizes. Still in studio with me are Derek Janssen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Ian Cruikshanks from the South African Institute of Race Relations. So I gave you a very tough question, and this one you can only blame one viewer who means well and he wants to know. So Vasani wants to know, Seeing that the South African economy is contracting, does it make sense to go for rand hedge stocks, or do you go offshore? And if you do, which territory is least affected by the trade war?
Yes, that is a tough question. Mm-hmm. Are they all going to be affected? Is this a global move? When I saw yesterday the crossover that there has been, where long-term bond yields are higher than short-term money market stocks, that I find it very worrying. Mm. It's traditionally a bear market signal, a strong economic bear market signal. And that just says, beware, even bonds may not be the safest place, because interest rates could be even lower for longer than has been anticipated. So one's got to say, whatever one's answer is to the question specifically on stocks, that's first and foremost.
Yeah.
I think that's a very valid point that Ian's making there. If you just go look as a case example at US Treasury yields at the moment and have a look at the levels of markets and look how that gap has widened up, something's got to give.
Yeah.
You either need more growth where, you know, interest rate hikes are going to be sort of the common talk of town, which it's not at the moment.
Yeah.
And that gap needs to close. So are US Treasury yields potentially going to go up? It doesn't look like it. And US markets are sitting at lofty levels at the moment. So that gap needs to close somehow. So I kind of get a bit worried about the levels of US markets and think there could be a bit of a short-term pullback. Mm. Let's just go back to the question about buying rand hedge stocks or investing offshore. Well, I think we're quite limited with our rand hedge exposure, to be honest. I mean, we've obviously seen things like Anheuser-Busch, which has been very strong of late, do very well. You know, you've got things like British American Tobacco, which as a company are facing their own regulatory challenges. So where would I rather invest? Well, firstly, I would like to own dollars outright.
Yes.
And secondly, just look at the quality of companies that are listed on the NASDAQ, for example, or within the US arena. You know, would I rather own JP Morgan, just as a case example, or First Rand? I know First Rand's not the Rand hedge, but definitely a JP Morgan. And just look at something like an Amazon, the way they've built that business and their ability to move into multiple sectors from where they sit at the moment and move away from retail. And the cash on balance sheet on these companies is just so strong. The quality of the companies is just that much better. So, you know, to finitely answer that question, I'd certainly own US-based stocks and rather have my money sitting in dollars.
All right. So we had a banking question, and I suppose this is on the back of you attending NetBank's results. Yes. The viewer wants to know, what do you think of Standard Bank?
I think it's excellently run domestic bank. Mm-hmm. That they seem to be moving with the times, with the changing circumstances. But there's no doubt, and Mike Brown, the CEO of Nedbank, made it quite clear that the business area of banking is becoming more competitive. There's greater competition to offer more products at lower returns to the banks with what is going to be higher risk. It's not to say that there's any threat to them of a particular degree, that it's going to be a very competitive, difficult environment, and I think that Standard Bank and Nedbank, and the First Rand Group too, are all in a race to provide facilities, banking facilities, to the vast unbanked majority, out of whom they won't make very much profit.
Yeah.
So that makes it, just to say, yes, they're getting into these new areas, exploring new areas, but will they make a lot more profit out of it? I think maybe more sideways now.
Yeah.
Look, I can remember not so long ago, personally within the last decade, when the bank's profits were growing by 25% per year. It was another environment, high inflation, different expectations. And we Nedbank very proudly announced, we've made 2.5% increase in our profits. 2.5%? Heck, that's not that exciting, is it? Mm. That's certainly negative from an inflationary point of view. Do you want a bank as an investment?
Yeah.
And I say that's debatable.
Okay, so the next question is from Francois, and he wants to know, what is the panel's view on Altron, and to what extent is their performance affected by government's current economic policy?
So, look, I mean, I've actually haven't looked at Altron in some time, so I wouldn't be able to give a conclusive and finite answer on that from a pure operational perspective. And So I'm actually going to stand back from that question. I don't know if you've got a view on it, Ian.
Yes, I've had a chat. Actually, I had a lunch with the chairman.
Oh, that's even better.
Yes, it was indeed, and he paid. But because I had been asking some questions at a presentation they did, he said, I want to tell you some more about Altron. Mm-hmm. It helped that he was the deputy CEO of Nedbank a long time ago, and we had a good association. But they have changed that company. It's now vital. It's get up and go. It's not just a family-controlled, old-fashioned business run for the benefit of a small minority. Yes. It's now do something for the shareholders, make it efficient. If there's an operating area that they're in and it doesn't look as though it can be made efficient and can be made profitable, sell it. Mm. If not, they say, we'll give it away. They're just not prepared to take any passenger areas with them.
Yeah.
They've got to be really strong contributors. And so from that point of view, I mean, one has to bear in mind the share price has really been performing, perhaps overly so. Mm. But if you haven't got it, put it on your shopping list to buy if there should be a pullback.
Okay.
And just looking at the chart of it, you know, just look at that move that we've had this year. Wow, that's been quite exciting. But if it gets some of the way back, it's one to consider if the market timing overall is right.
Okay. The next question is, what is the panel's view on Sibanye-Stillwater?
So, look, I must say I commend management for actually turning this company into the look and feel of what it is today. You know, this was an unbundling, I think, came out of Goldfields,
right.
Sat on predominantly, you know, low quality gold assets, did the Stillwater acquisition, and were quite clever in terms of how they raised the cash to do that. And they actually recently did another rights issue, if I remember correctly, a couple months ago, around 1850-ish, around there. And obviously they've been big benefactors from having that Stillwater asset in their stable from a platinum and a palladium perspective in terms of what those prices have been doing. So where it's positioned now, it's still got a bit of leverage on balance sheet. It's a very high risk company to call an investment view on. Very volatile, very much a risk on risk off trade. Trades very closely to the rest of the gold stocks, which have obviously all been performing very well. Sitting above 20, starting to look expensive, to be honest. Actually very expensive. I certainly wouldn't be chasing it. If markets go or get worse from where we are at the moment, then that sentiment trade could take place again. But for me, it's a trading stock. There's got to be some fundamental underpin. At the moment, it's too high for me.
Yes, I'd just like to say, I know that it's not only gold, but gold stocks are for trading, not for long-term safety-first investing. Mm-hmm. Keep the widows and orphans away from those sort of stocks. You know, it's for the people with a high degree of risk awareness. And I think that that's important. And if you look at the performance in the share price, as you said, over the last, just this year, wow, that's pretty frothy.
It must be one of the best performing stocks on the markets during the course of 2019.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
So that's enough.
Yeah. Okay. Before we get to stock picks, Fabian wants to know, what is the panel's view on MTN and Sasol? Should I buy?
So we obviously had some numbers out of MTN today.
Yes.
And
yes.
We saw a bit of a contraction there. The share price came off a little bit. You know, to be honest with you, it's come down sharply from the levels that it once traded at. And we saw a lot of emphasis on the back of getting money out of Nigeria, a lot of fines being hit on them, questions being asked whether they're doing, how they're doing business, and, you know, why are they in the spotlight for regularity issues. For me, that's always a red flag of concern.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't like to see that. At the end of the day, you know, they certainly do have a core business that delivers strong cash flows. And Nigeria is quite a significant part of, you know, the profitability that this business now delivers. They did get that banking license in Nigeria, which was quite interesting. And how they monetize that is going to be quite key. The question then remains, are we going to be able to get that cash out of Nigeria? Is there going to be another fine? It's a risky little share, just given the geographic location that it operates in. But they've certainly done a good job in terms of creating strong market share in South Africa, and again got a business that generates strong cash flow.
I wonder if they're getting hit on because they're seen as a soft target, and that's unanswerable.
Sure.
Sure. If one thinks about it, it's a risk.
Just quickly on Sasol before we get to stock picks.
If I look at what's happening to the oil price,
yeah,
and it's come back considerably, percentage-wise, over the last few weeks, I think that is a good indicator of lower activity worldwide in the energy markets,
yeah,
which leads commodities and all other levels of enterprise. I would not buy Sasol at the moment. Oil producers, I think, can be left alone. Mm. And with the Saudis approaching other members of OPEC regarding cutting back, well, they're not having any success yet.
All right. So one thing that is happening tonight is both of you, in terms of stock picks, I'm normally used to divergent views, but this time both of you are going for cash. Derek, why?
So again, going back to the earlier part of our conversation, if I was going to look for a stock to buy, it would typically be in the U.S.
Yes.
At this stage of the game. I spoke about the gap between U.S. treasuries and where markets are at the moment. It does concern me. I am a buyer of the U.S. market, but I just don't think we're at levels that I'd like to see just yet. I'm keeping a close eye on things like Microsoft. It's sitting at around 135. If that sort of dips under 120, that's starting to look interesting. Mm. I mentioned Amazon. I really do like that business, but it does look a bit lofty. If it does pull back towards 17, 1650, that's something that I'd look at. So I'm keeping some powder dry, waiting, being patient, and looking for an opportunity on a bit more of a pullback.
Ian, yes. 30 seconds.
What do you say about an economy that can produce between 1 and 200,000 jobs every month? New jobs.
Yeah.
Heck, it's got to be the only game to play. It must be the place to be.
Right.
In that respect, from my point of view, I would take whatever I can out of South African markets and keep it in dollars, in cash, in the U.S. at the moment.
All right, gentlemen, on that note, let's leave it there. Thank you so much to my guests, Derek Jansen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Ian Cruikshanks from the South African Institute of Race Relations. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening. One thing that is happening tonight is both of you, in terms of stock picks, I'm normally used to divergent views, but this time both of you are going for cash. Derek, why?
So again, going back to the earlier part of our conversation, if I was going to look for a stock to buy, it would typically be in the U.S.
Yes.
At this stage of the game. I spoke about the gap between U.S. treasuries and where markets are at the moment. It does concern me. I am a buyer of the U.S. market, but I just don't think we're at levels that I'd like to see just yet. I'm keeping a close eye on things like Microsoft. It's sitting at around 135. If that sort of dips under 120, that's starting to look interesting. Mm. I mentioned Amazon. I really do like that business, but it does look a bit lofty. If it does pull back towards 17, 1650, that's something that I'd look at. So I'm keeping some powder dry, waiting, being patient, and looking for an opportunity on a bit more of a pullback.
Ian, 30 seconds.
What do you say about an economy that can produce between 1 and 200,000 jobs every month? New jobs.
Yeah.
Heck, it's got to be the only game to play. It must be the place to be.
Right.
In that respect, from my point of view, I would take whatever I can out of South African markets and keep it in dollars, in cash, in the U.S. at the moment.
All right, gentlemen, on that note, let's leave it there. Thank you so much to my guests, Derek Jansen van Rensburg from Anchor Securities and Ian Cruikshanks from the South African Institute of Race Relations. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening.